This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
What an honor it is tonight to be inducted in this class of 2007 with such tremendous athletes. I am humbled by you all. One thing is for sure, though, when you go back and you look at our industry, you look at passion. You look at the road. You look at hard times on the road. You look at driving down the road, night after night, trying to make a town, getting $25. That's hard times. It's our duty to make it good times for the fans that pay their money to see us perform each and every night. Superstar Billy Graham in Madison Square Garden on the third match when I walked out of the ring. There's a shot of me looking back. And you know why I was looking back? It was not about the money. It was about, I don't want this night to be over. I want this thing to still happen. I want to be able to take all this in. I love this industry. Like I said, you paid for it. You put me in the place that I am today. Being a Hall of Famer with these guys is very special. I love you too, buddy. You don't know how much. So with that being said, I want to say just a little one of my rhymes that became very famous, and hope I didn't forget anybody. And, I think, that it's important to not forget when you're up here talking. I already talked about these guys. But truly, I have wined and dined with kings and queens. Thank you.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the History of Wrestling podcast. A bit of a somber note today as we are recording, having just learned in the past few hours of the passing of the American Dream Dusty Rhodes. Brad Stutz, Graham Coffin, and Dan Ginn. Going to take you through a bit of a remembrance for the American Dream Dusty Rhodes, who we just learned literally hours ago has passed away this morning. And Graham, this is really in an age where, regrettably, so many of us have kind of become desensitized almost to wrestler death. This is one that has really sent shockwaves throughout the industry. It came very suddenly, and this is one that has really seems to have touched a lot of people and really kind of blindsided the whole industry.
It really was. It was about 3 o'clock this afternoon, and oddly enough, I was leaving a funeral, and I turned my phone back on, and my wife had sent me, as she just did, if anyone heard that ping, she had just sent me a Facebook message, and it was Dusty died? ? And I just read it. I didn't respond immediately. I just read it, and I went, whoa, because of, they're for a good long, maybe 10 years or so, we were used to this kind of stuff. It was the guys that lived hard in the 80s and the 90s. It was the older guys, whatever. We were kind of used to it. But Dusty especially is such an institution. I mean, there's never been in all of our lives, all three of us who are here, in the entirety of our lives, there has never not been Dusty Rhodes selling out arenas all over the world. And it's very much kind of like a, well, at this point of that level, who's left?
Yeah, I think there's a handful of people who have that kind of charisma that can not just captivate an audience, but who can really captivate an area, a community, or a city, or a state, or, you know, what have you. And Dusty was one of those people. He had that Hogan, Austin level charisma. And I feel like, you know, me being 31 years old, almost 32, growing up in the Carolinas, I've lived within an hour or so of Greensboro for my entire life. If you grew up in the Carolinas in the 80s, no matter if you were really a fan per se or not, Dusty was almost like a cultural figure in this part of the country. And I think I want to get Dan in on this because, you know, for someone growing up in the South, Dusty was pretty much almost in the fabric of what we grew up with. Dan, you know, kind of take us through, from someone growing up in the Northeast and growing up in New England, kind of take us through your kind of perception or your introduction to Dusty Rhodes and his contributions to the industry.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I kind of take a little bit from what Graham was saying before about how, I mean, this really was a legend that kind of superseded, like, a particular era. You know, it's not like, well, you know, I watched WWE during the polka dot days, or I watched during, like, the initial Starcades. You know, that's when I first got introduced. You know, there were guys that were pretty, or there were people that are reading these news stories now and thinking and remembering who he was, because he did kind of touch a lot of people over the course of the years. I mean, you take a look at us. I mean, I remember Dusty Rhodes from wearing the polka dots, and I know a lot of that's probably a rib, and a lot of people are like, oh, that was when he was kind of silly when he was working for Vince. But that's what I remember, is the guy wearing the black tank top with the yellow polka dots, dancing around with Sweet Sapphire and all that sort of thing. And then, you know, when you got to watch a little bit more, you got to see him in his, like, epic battles with Ric Flair before that, when he was competing for the world title. And then when you get a little bit more smart to the business, you remember that, oh, he was, like, booking territories and coming up with creative ideas for WCW and that sort of thing. And then he was an announcer for a time. And then now, even looking now today, like even a few months ago, he was appearing on a pay-per-view, but his legacy carried over into his two boys, his two sons, you know, Goldust in the Attitude Era, and then Cody in this kind of new, kind of more modern era, the reality era, whatever you want to call it. So there are fans that are like 8 or 9 years old right now who think, oh, that's Cody Rhodes' dad, yeah, and he helped them beat the Shield and keep their jobs a couple years ago, and, you know, so they have that familiarity, and then, of course, we have our history of what we remember the American Dream Dusty Rhodes as, so it really is kind of one of those moments. Like, I was at work, and I texted a few friends. One was somebody who watch wrestling every day, you know, and weekly like we do. And one was just like my brother, who hasn't watched wrestling since the late 80s, early 90s. And both of them were touched in a very, you know, pretty much a similar way. Like, oh, man, like what a loss. So, yeah, it really is a somber get together that we're having today. But it's kind of cliche, but we're kind of celebrating the life that was the American Dream Dusty Rhodes.
I think Dan really brings up a good point, and that is that as a larger than life character, and you know, not just a wrestler, but as someone who really was a cornerstone of the industry, Dusty really spanned generations. You know, there's a generation, Graham and Dan, for that matter, who remember, you know, Dusty in Florida with Gary Hart and Kevin Sullivan. There's our generation that remembers the glory years of Jim Crockett Promotions in the 80s and the Great American Bashes and the Starcades. And even, you know, when he went to New York, there's a generation after us that might remember him only as, you know, the on-air commissioner of TNA or of NXT, or as, you know, Cody and Dustin's father, or just as a Hall of Famer that you would see brought out on old school Raws and waving in the crowd and WrestleManias and stuff like that. But I mean, that's, you know, three or four generations that this guy's influence has been felt. And that's just on camera. That's not talking about all the contributions that he made behind the scenes and developing talent and nurturing ideas and putting memorable shows together. But like literally, I mean, that's three or four generations that this guy's fingerprints have been on the business for. And there's not that many people you can say that about.
No, really, and I was thinking about this earlier with Vern Gagne passing away earlier this year. You've got what? Vince, you've got Bill Watts, and to some degree, you've got Paul Heyman and Jim Cornette. And yeah. Is there anyone else?
It's a short list of people who have had the durability of different of surviving multiple eras. I think you might could add Hulk Hogan to that list, you know, having wrestled in the territories and then through New York and through WCW.
Right.
It's a short list
of a booker standpoint or of someone who is kind of big behind the scenes as a promoter. But yeah, you're right. As a performer, you've got Hogan, you've got Flair, but that list is short.
Yeah, it's very short. And it, like I said, I keep going back to the notion that if you grew up as I did in the Carolinas in the 80s, he was just a part of the culture. You know, you would hear him on the radio, you would see him in TV commercials, and, you know, some of those like the Mellow Yellow commercials have made their way to YouTube in the past few years and stuff like that. But, it was almost like, you know, he was just the face for wrestling, him and Flair, in this part of the country in that era. And it really, I don't know, it seems like you can't get away from that. He's always going to be attached to this part of the country. And by this part of the country, I mean the Carolinas, where Graham and I both reside. And I think it's very interesting that Dan's first exposure was to when he went to New York and he became the common man and wore the polka dots. And I wonder, you know, statistically, I wish I kind of had that in front of me. I wonder for how many people that rings true. I wonder for how many people it was seeing that image broadcast on worldwide TV with WWF and then going back and learning about the history. And yeah, that's kind of what we're here to talk about is the history. Really interesting to me to hear Dan's account of the first time ever seeing Dusty being the common man in his run in the WWF wearing the polka dots, because for me and so many others my age, he was kind of a part of the fabric of growing up in the Carolinas in the 80s. Dusty was on TV and radio commercials and, you know, not just wrestling. His star power exceeded wrestling. Graham, you actually started watching wrestling in the early 90s. So what's your first frame of reference for Dusty Rhodes? What's the first time you remember seeing or hearing about or being introduced to Dusty Rhodes?
Probably going to Blockbuster and renting old Coliseum videos. So it would have been the same. It would have been Polka Dot Dusty. But at the same time, or shortly thereafter, is when I started watching WCW. And he was kind of back office guy. Sometimes he would be on television. And really, I probably knew Dustin Rhodes before I knew Dusty Rhodes.
So you're one of your first times really seeing Dusty would have been like one of the angles that he shot kind of later in life, like volunteering to be Dustin's partner in the War Games or something that, in that ballpark.
It would have been like whatever. I started watching WCW right before the first Slamboree.
Okay.
So that would have been when they brought in all the legends and made a big deal about all the legends before the pay-per-view. And I'm certain, you know, him being and big in the company at that point, that he had his own video package and he was played up as one of those guys that was going to be featured at the show.
Yeah. So for either of you or both of you, you know, kind of going back and learning about the influence of him and different places that he'd wrestled and things of that nature, to kind of go back and catch up, what are some of the things that jumped out at you as you kind of went back and caught up on your Dusty Rhodes history, so to speak?
Well, we were talking about, for me, like I said earlier, was about the polka dots and everything. My start with him came in 1989, kind of at like the peak of his arrival up in New York. You know, he danced, he did all that sort of stuff. The fans just immediately gravitated to this guy. Like the pops and the reaction were there. He'd beaten, I believe it was the Honky Tonk Man on SummerSlam that mm-hmm. year, and then started a program with the Big Boss Man, because the Boss Man would chain people to the rope, and he would beat them with the nightstick and everything, and the American Dream wasn't for that at all. So he came down and he stole the Big Boss Man's hat and took his nightstick and said, "No more, Mr. Big Boss Man." So then next thing you know, they're on opposing sides of Survivor Series, and I did a show, obviously, documenting my first pay-per-view experience was the Survivor Series 1989. They had the Dream Team and the Enforcers, and just the images of this just over, you know, for me, it was like this overweight, jolly old man running down to the ring with his policeman hat on and his nightstick, and everybody just loves him. Just they want to get closer to this guy. And he survives. But, you know, the other thing that you learn about Dusty is, like, he would do a lot to, as far as just the expression everybody uses now is, like, show ass. But he would do a lot if it meant putting a few extra bodies in the arena, you know, if it meant drawing money. I mean, he probably did not have to break open his skin at the end of a Survivor Series match during the golden era, the WWF era back then, but he did. He allowed himself to get chained to that ring rope and get bludgeoned by the nightstick. He didn't care, because it just created that sympathy, like, oh man, how Dusty, is he gonna be okay? So I mean, like, so those are like the initial images of what I got from this guy. I mean obviously, like, I always come up about this from like the fan's perspective. I'm not like the big time hardcore historian on this particular panel. I just remember moments like that, and of course the promo that Boss Man did after that match is also quite memorable. But I mean, even when he was victorious, or if he was taking a hit, you always had to know what was going to happen next with this guy during that initial run. And of course it was kind of like a tale of two cities during his time in New York. But, you know, one was his real high, and then we got really, really low. But you never really were uninterested when Dusty Rhodes was involved in a storyline during that time.
Yeah, for me, I think my initial recollections from that time period would have been, you know, me obviously running tapes and coming home and popping in, say, like Starrcade 86 or something like that, where he comes out and he's got Tully shaved into his head. And it's bare bones production. It's not flashy. It's not so the arena is not so bright that you can see every person that's sitting in the crowd like you can the WWF. But he comes out and that Greensboro crowd just loses their shit. And it's very much a Bruno Sammartino reaction. And so for someone that might have been more used to WWF and you're watching Jim Crockett Promotions and you're seeing this guy who does not look like Hulk Hogan come out to the ring and draw that kind of reaction, you go, okay, he's somebody to watch. He's got that crowd wrapped around his fingers. And going back to the WWF run, Dan spoke about the Boss Man run, and that's really interesting for a few reasons. One is it's a throwback to Dusty and Big Bubba in 1987, and Dusty came up with the Big Bubba character to begin with, and so it's really fun to kind of see that mentor-mentee relationship grow. The big feud that really, I think, shows what Dusty could do in the WWF is, well, it's two. One, if you want to go way back, it's Superstar Billy Graham in 1977. But for his second run, it's Ted DiBiase, which was a perfect foil for – well, I mean, Dream was a perfect foil for DiBiase's character. And that whole SummerSlam 1990 angle where you find out that DiBiase has paid off Sapphire and Dusty loses to the Macho King, and he cuts that incredible promo that might be one of my favorite promos of his, about how Sapphire took the money and that's fine. I offered her my innocence. She paid me back in scorn. And how Ted DiBiase can buy anything, but he can't buy the American Dream. And that was gold. I loved it. And it was so good, despite at that point his standing on the roster.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think they were perfect opponents for each other, the common man against the $1 million man. And I think that, you know, interviews like that are really a big part of Dusty's legacy, because and he knew what story needed to be told, and he had the tools to tell it, and he knew how to attach the people to him, or attach himself to the people. He just had that innate ability. It wasn't, you know, there's been a lot of good promos, and there are a lot of guys that could talk people into the building, but there's only so many that really reach out and touch the audience, and the audience feels a part of them. And I think, you know, just the way that he would say things like, you know, I gave Sapphire my innocence and she repaid me with scorn. He just had a way of relating to the audience and the audience relating to him. You know, if he won, we all won. And if he lost, we all lost. And I think that that's something that very few people have ever captured in the business. And you talk about the reactions of Dusty Rhodes at the Starcades and the Great American Bashes and stuff. To me personally, obviously, Hogan had some monstrous ovations. Nobody's ever going to debate that. But the fans, they were a little wilder in the South. They were a little rowdier in the South. Yeah, to me, there's nothing like the Von Erichs coming down the aisle in Texas, or Dusty and Nikita coming down the aisle in Greensboro. The famous one to me is always going to be Ole Anderson and J.J. Dillon are going to fight Dusty Rhodes and Magnum T.A. in a cage, and Magnum T.A. has his car accident that would end up ending his career. And on very little notice, the story then becomes, well, who's, you know, who's Dusty's partner going to be? Is Dusty going to have a partner? And then I thought it was such an amazing moment to watch and to really let it sink in. No promo explaining it, no, you know, angle to set it up, no backstage thing where we shake hands and we hug. Dusty just walks down the aisle with Nikita Koloff, who had been, you know, the number one heel in the territory up to that moment. Nikita just 5 or 6 steps behind Dusty. And literally, you watch that footage, and it's like the information travels around the building, and you can see the buzz growing, and you can see people coming up out of their seats because nobody really is sure what's going to happen. If he's going to double cross Dusty or if, you know, it does what? And then Dusty steps in the cage first and he goes 2-on-1 for about 30 seconds. And then when Nikita jumps in the cage and he starts attacking Ole Anderson, it's a roar. I mean, it's a literal pop of people absolutely, as Graham said, losing their shit. And, like, to me, I'm not going to say it's exclusive. Something like that is exclusive to Southern wrestling. But it happened a lot more in Southern wrestling than it did in, like, New York or other parts of the world. And Dusty really had his pulse on Southern wrestling, the Carolinas and Florida. And, like, those crowds are a little different than a New York crowd. And I think he knew how to reach the common man. And I think that's why that WWF run, a lot of people remember it fondly, because I think that was a great way to use Dusty, because, you know, he represented that common man and you could attach yourself to it. You know, people make fun of the polka dots or whatever, but to me, I thought that was pretty much, you know, as far as calling him the common man and this and that, that's pretty much, I think, how you introduce Dusty to the worldwide audience of the WWF. I mean, he was the epitome of the common man.
Yeah, you really cared. You really did care about what he was doing, as I was saying before. Graham, just to piggyback off of what you were saying about the Million Dollar Man, I remember watching with my best friend at watching SummerSlam 1990, and it was really kind of amazing when Sapphire joins up with and gets bought. And then I just remember this image of Dusty running out after his match, after losing to Macho King, and he's running out, and he goes into the parking lot, he's trying to stop this limousine from driving off, and he's just, like, banging on the car, and he's just running, and you know he's not going to catch it, and he just has his hands on his hips, and he's just, you know, he's been looking for Sapphire all night long, and he can't get her. She just drives off. And I just remember, like, going to bed, because I had, like, a sleepover with my buddy at the time, and you know, I'm, like, really young, and it was just like, you think Dusty's going to be okay? Like, and I, like, remember asking my father, Dad, is Dusty going to be okay? Like, this was, like, a really, really tough night. You know, and that's just, like, the innocence of a child, just kind of like, you know, I just, like, felt like, because I really fell for the character. I really felt for the plot that, you know, the plight that he was now in. And, but, like, getting back to the point I was saying before, like, because he had such an emotional attachment with the fans, like, if, you know, he would do things like, all right, well, if making Undertaker look invincible is what's good for business right now, I will take the fall. I will take the hit. He could beat the bejesus out of me all night for all I care. That's fine by me. If my son's gonna, you know, get hit in the head with a chair and Million Dollar Man wants to buy his seat, that's perfect. That'll just gain so much more sympathy on my character and my son's character, and Million Dollar Man's gonna look like this evil maniacal genius who just won't let me go. You know, it that's kind of why I kind of look at his WWE run, and not only just because I was a kid and this was kind of like my, you know, golden era, but you remember some of these stories and they still hit you when you hear them even many, many years later.
All right, to be completely upfront with everybody, this is not the show that we even planned tonight. This was supposed to be, a few days ago, we had set up to do to bring back Wrestling with Optimism. We had a special guest. We're not going to tell you who it is. We're going to just bring it back next week. And then, obviously, as we've talked about, this afternoon changed everything. And I don't know if this kind of comes across on the show or not, but there's not a whole lot of quote-unquote preparation. It's a lot of just free-flowing conversation. So when at, say, we start taping at 7 o'clock tonight, when it's, say, at 6:30, I start, you know, frenzied making notes about what I want to talk about, and I don't really tell anyone what my major talking points are going to be because it'll just happen. And then Brad Stutz gives away one of my greatest talking points, which is the babyface turn of Nikita Koloff, and then I have to highlight everything and then push delete. It's very crushing. It's very crushing. But
that's why I don't do formats, Graham. That's why I don't do formats.
Because you're just running over them anyway. But right. a couple ago, a couple days ago, and you guys can back me up on this. I texted you and I said, hey, for an upcoming History of Wrestling episode, we should do the best turns. Correct?
Absolutely.
That's what the whole that was the very thing that was I based that decision on, is how brilliant Nikita's turn was. I've been watching a lot of mid-80s Crockett lately, just the weekly television, whether it be the Saturday 605 show or Worldwide or whatever, from about 84 to 86. And if you've ever seen it, and it's from the Philadelphia Civic Center, and as you said, it's right after Magnum gets hurt. It's literally a few days after Magnum's wreck. And it's actually supposed to be Dusty and Tully in a cage. But Dusty had mangled Tully's legs at the Greensboro Coliseum. So it's actually supposed – it ends up being JJ. It's going to be Dusty and JJ. But Ole is in the ring too, and Tully's in the ring. And I think – or he's at ringside. He's got crutches. And Dusty comes out, and Nikita comes out. And I recently watched – we had him on as a guest a long time ago. Michael Elliott did a documentary on Ivan Koloff. And it's so interesting to hear Ivan's take on that whole situation, because earlier in the show, I don't know if it actually comes across in the documentary or not, but earlier in the show, the Russians worked a match against whoever in a six-man, I think it was. So Nikita was already there. Nikita had already worked a match against the babyface team. And so Dusty comes out and Nikita's with him and no one really knows what's going on. And then Nikita jumps the Horseman and the Philadelphia Civic Center goes batshit crazy, and that is when, at the end of the match, you've got Dusty and Nikita in the ring, Flair comes out, and you get your little Flair-Nikita confrontation that eventually leads to Starrcade. And here's a really interesting story. So that same night, it's October 86, that same night, the WWF is running the Spectrum. Dusty Rhodes takes the microphone after that main event, after that whole situation goes down, and he says, somebody tell Hulk Hogan that Dusty Rhodes is in town.
That's amazing.
Isn't it?
I love that.
That nice. Footage, it's professionally shot at the Philadelphia Civic Center, which really became a hub for them. It kind of became along the same lines as what Baltimore was at that point and would later become, but that was really the setup to Nikita and Flair at Starrcade, which just brilliant. You know, at that moment, your biggest rising star may not live the next week. That is how bad the situation is. So your biggest show of the year is about a month away. And just brilliantly, like, can you imagine you're in that situation? You have to book your biggest show of the year. Meanwhile, your territory's Hulk Hogan could be dying, and you have to change the conversation. Yeah. And if you watch that following week's television where they show what went down in Philadelphia, and then you get a sit-down promo from Dusty and Nikita sitting side by side, which you combine that with Rocky IV, and I do believe that's what ended the Cold War.
That union of Dusty and Nikita ended the Cold War.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I'm fine with that. And that really, you know, I think leads us to a discussion of Dusty behind the scenes. Dusty the booker, Dusty the creative genius, Dusty the matchmaker, Dusty the mentor. And I think maybe we'll take a break. We'll hear from all the other shows in the Place to Be Nation. We'll come back and we'll talk about Dusty behind the scenes, his influence, and the fact that he literally was continuing to influence rising young talent right up until the day of his death, when we come back on the History of Wrestling on the Place to Be Nation.
You know, David Crockett, it's understood by now that Ole Anderson, one of the Four Horsemen, is back, and 7, 8, 9 years of my lifetime has been spent waking up in the morning with a toothache or a black eye or stitches in my face at the hands of Ole Anderson. And that's fine. because the same time I was waking up with a little heartache, with a little serious pain, he was waking up with twice as much serious heartache and serious pain. And the four husbands, Tully Blanchard, Ian Anderson, Ole Anderson, James J. Dillon, and the Nature Boy Ric Flair, it brings to mind one thing. At the Great American Bash, this country's capital, Washington, D.C., is the very place in my heart, because that place is where it's going to happen. Ric Flair, you come out here and can talk about 13 other guys, 13 other men, and not a one of them has wore the gold around the waist one time, much less two times. Dusty Rhodes has. Two times world's heavyweight champion. And Ronald Reagan, you and Nancy better get your seats. And Delvin and Joe Ely, I want it rocking and socking. Because in Washington, D.C., the American dream becomes world's heavyweight champion for the third time. And the four husbands can take that to the bank.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of The Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com, The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner, at least we hope.
Place to Be Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to The Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and placetobenation.com. You can check out myself and Scott Criscolo on The Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, home of great interviews and our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. If you need your fix of current wrestling talk, we have plenty of options for you there, including Main Events, which features a roundtable discussion led by PTBN analysts and special guests, our monthly pay-per-view reaction show, including immediate feedback and discussion for WWE, NXT, Ring of Honor, and New Japan Super Shows, and Wrestling with Optimism, which focuses on the positives of the business. Also, be sure to relive wrestling's past through Graham Cawthon's excellent exclusive History of Wrestling podcast, Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave's Wrestling Culture podcast, our monthly pay-per-view rewind roundtable series led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance podcast starring myself and Pro Wrestling Only's Will, diving into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. Sports fans have plenty to dive into as well. We feature The Extra Point with Scott Criscolo and Dr. G, The Kings of Sport featuring Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, The Sports Sound hosted by Cowboy and Cowboy Sr., as well as the NBA Team Podcast, which takes a year-round deep dive into pro hoops. PTBN also proudly features Richard and the Mailman podcast, which specializes in the world of TV, thought leadership, anger, and irreverence. As mentioned, all these shows are available on PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. PTBN is also home to the tremendous in-depth features on pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments, and more. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, Scott Keats, RSPWFAQ.com blog, and Piledriver.net.
The Place to Be Nation and Pro Wrestling Only are proud to present the PWO-PTBN Podcast Network. Join us for a variety of great shows that explore all the facets of professional wrestling.
Join good old Will from Texas for our Place to Be Nation reaction shows, and Goodwill Wrestling, which has been kicking since before JR had barbecue sauce.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play and join Chad and Parv as they discuss classic NWA and WCW pay-per-view.
And take in one of our newest podcasts, Exile on Bed Street, and allow Chris Zellner to give you a history lesson about important moments in wrestling's colorful past.
Listen to Johnny, Pete, Parv, and Kelly, the titans of wrestling, as they examine in depth the history of the WWF in the 1970s and 1980s.
And then there's Brainbuster, the wrestling game show, Tag Teams Back Again, the Pro Wrestling Super Show, the All Japan Excite Series, and the Super Extreme Vault for some ECW.
You can hear all of these great podcasts and more on one feed. Remember, PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network, part of the Place to Be Nation family.
From the pages of the World Wrestling Federation official merchandise catalog, here's Dusty Rhodes.
this is Dusty Rhodes, and you know I got my hands full in the World Wrestling Federation. And full of what? Come in here, Dolly. We're going to show them some stuff. I got the official WWF merchandising catalog stuff right here. You can order it out of that catalog. I'm going to tell you in a minute how to get it. Look at here. We got a WWF hat right here. Look how fine that looks on Dusty Rhodes and Magazine. What else we got? Woo, Sapphire, come on in here, baby. We got an Ultimate Warrior Suck Cup. And you can take this cup, put milk in it, juicy, whatever you want to do. What else we got? Oh, look at here. A belt. You can be a champion. Everybody can be a champion. Just like all the great stars in the World Wrestling Federation. And what else, darling, right here? Oh, show that. That's my favorite. Hold that up there. Dusty Rhodes official t-shirt. Throw that up there in the camera. Oh, is that pretty? And let me tell you, merchandise catalog, genuine. Only place you can get it right to this address right now.
Welcome back to the History of Wrestling podcast here on the Place to Be Nation. This is a very scaled down, bare bones, sitting around the campfire, telling Dusty stories episode. We're talking Dusty Rhodes, the performer, the agent, the booker, the personality. And we just got done talking about his role in turning Nikita Koloff babyface. And we're going to talk a little bit about him as a mentor. But one of the things that was really interesting to me when I moved to the Carolinas about 10 years ago was whenever I would go to a nostalgia show or a fan fest that Dusty was at, there was always a little bit of anti-Dusty. There was always an anti-Dusty contingent of fans there. And I'd be interested to hear from Brad about if you felt that as well and why that was.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we talked a little while earlier about the generations and how Dusty really spanned multiple generations like very few performers in our business have. And there was a definite pushback that continues honestly to this day by people a little bit older than myself, and we all three are pretty much around the same age. People about 10 to 15 years older than us, there was a definite pushback against Dusty with the notion, correct or incorrect, that, you know, he was at the helm of Jim Crockett Promotions when it went down. It was his fingerprints on the gun, so to speak, that killed this part of Americana to them. You know, wrestling in the Carolinas was in the fabric of your life. If you grew up in, you know, the 60s, 70s, and early 80s, Dusty comes in right around the time of the first Starrcade and the beginning of 1984, and, you know, eventually takes over as Booker, and it's under his regime that Jim Crockett Promotion soars to great heights with the Starrcades and the Great American Bashes. But it's also under his regime that Jim Crockett Promotions ultimately finds itself $1 million in debt and selling to Ted Turner. And a lot of people in this part of the country in their 40s, 50s, and 60s resented Dusty for that, feeling that he had we had left this, you know, almost like people in some parts of the country would resent a head coach that took a winning franchise and made it into a losing franchise. The feeling of those people was that we entrusted our home team in your hands and you let us down. And I've heard that, you know, pretty much since the day I set foot in the wrestling business. As a 15-year-old kid, I've always heard people talking about, that almost blaming him for Crockett Promotions' demise. You know, I think you can argue either side of that. I think Dusty, as a creative visionary, by 1988, probably was not in his sharpest form. You know, things like revisiting the Midnight Rider in the springtime of 88 around the time of the Crockett Cup. And that didn't go over well. Certain things, a lot of people give him blame for there never being a UWF versus NWA interpromotion feud or supercard or what have you. And yeah, if you look at the landscape in 1988, which is the, you know, the last full year for Crockett Promotions, or the last year for Crockett Promotions, it's a lot of ideas that have been done before. It's a lot of, you know, kind of more of the same, you know, Flair and Luger at the Bash, and then they return at Starrcade, and, Flair wrestling with Luger. There's a couple of things in there, turning Barry Windham heel and making him a Four Horsemen, and the impending Midnight Express versus Four Horsemen feud that never really got off the ground. So there were still some things cooking, but a lot of it, you know, felt like we'd seen it before. And of course, the thing that, you know, justifiably or not, has really become synonymous with him is the Dusty Finish. Which is typically, there's variations on it, but typically, the referee goes down, another referee comes out, the babyface wins the championship with the second referee, but the first referee wakes up and overturns the decision due to some egregious thing that was done in the process of the go home. You know, the heel threw him over the top rope, or, you know, he used the brass knucks or whatever. There's always been the talk that, you know, he overdid that finish, and you can't really, it's tough to explain to modern fans, maybe not, but, you know, modern fans, it would be the equivalent of if they did it every Monday night, because you saw wrestling in your hometown so regularly, whether you went to Greensboro or Roanoke or Richmond or Columbia, South Carolina, or wherever you went, that, you know, those finishes were brilliant the first time you saw them, and then they would do them again, and then they would do them again. And the thinking is, to sum it up, that it was Dusty that killed the territory. I don't really know if that's sound or not. A lot of the people that have said that were there, and I wasn't. But yeah, there has always been that pushback against Dusty from some people, I would say, you know, 10 to 15 years older than myself. And that's, I guess, the best way to kind of sum that up. And Graham, obviously, you know, you've heard it too, doing the fan fest and things of that nature. He had his fans, but he also had his detractors.
Well, a really great example as to the level of that, and I don't know if you were there or not, but it was 10 years ago, I think the Tribute to Starrcade show in Spartanburg. Were you at that show?
I was not.
That was...
Well, I mean, obviously, it was a big show in this part of the country. Go ahead.
Right, right. And for those that were not there or had never heard of it, you have certainly seen footage of it, because that's where the "It's Still Real to Me, Damn It" segment was taped and went viral, and the guy shows up on Tosh.0 and all that kind of stuff. So I was in that crowd when he started crying. During that same Q&A, and here's – I'll give two examples, but here's the first one. During that same Q&A, and it's a panel with Cornette and Terry Funk and the Midnight Express and one or two other guys, I think maybe Mick Foley – one of the people in the crowd stands up and they have a question and yada, 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 whatever. And then at the end of their question, maybe they were developing a little bit of a rant toward what Dusty did to the territory. And they get to the point where they say, you know, it was so good. And then by the end, Dusty Rhodes is selling $5 balcony seats at the Omni and kind of trashing him and that kind of thing. Well, guess who's waiting backstage? Guess who's listening backstage?
I've never heard this story.
And guess who's feeling a little froggy? So Dusty comes out as this guy is ripping him. And this is not a plan. I mean, this is an actual fan actually ripping Dusty Rhodes. Dusty comes out and gives the guy right back at him, saying, and he probably cursed a fair amount of during this too, but he's just, you know, saying, you know, that's bullshit, whatever, whatever, whatever. But he was almost in the guy's face. And that kind of shows, you know, this is the guy that for years was, but then also promoted himself as the number one babyface in the Carolinas. And here he is, you know, getting in the face of a fan 25 years later about his booking decisions and whether or not he did right by the territory. Okay, so that's the afternoon. Later that night is the actual show. And the show is pretty loaded. I mean, they've got Dustin Rhodes, they got Terry Funk, they got all these guys that were names to various degrees during the heyday of Crockett. The main event is Dusty Rhodes and Tully Blanchard. And it's for, you know, this brand new championship that we're going to make up, and it will somehow be defended on various indies for about 3 months before it disappears. So you've got Dusty and Tully, who were hated rivals for years, Dusty against the Horsemen, and that crowd could not have been more pro-Tully.
Oh, wow.
And Tully won. And that crowd was happy with that. And it's been 10 years. I could be wrong, but I think Dusty got kind of vocal with people during the match and after the match.
Yeah, I definitely think there's always been that kind of pocket of fans resentful of what they perceive to be, you know, mismanagement on Dusty's part. And again, that's not for me to comment on. I wasn't there, and you know, people that were there can comment on it. You know, when I was 4 years old, I thought the Midnight Rider was fucking cool, man. He was going to come avenge Magnum TA, and that was all right by me. But I was 4 years old, and I hadn't seen it in Florida, or I hadn't seen it, you know, anywhere else, and or hadn't seen Stagger Lee in Mid-South and what have you. Dan, what do you think of as terms now as an adult and as someone who's, you know, diligently done their research and learned about our industry? What jumps out at you as far as Dusty Rhodes' legacy as a creative man, or even for that matter in front of the camera? This is a guy that implemented a lot of ideas, you know, the Great American Bash and Battle Bowl and the War Games and so many ideas and so many characters for that matter that, you know, Dusty came up with, and he was still, you know, churning out creative ideas at FCW and NXT right up until his death. What do you look at? What jumps out at you as far as Dusty's legacy from a creative standpoint?
Well, he never really was afraid to take chances. And I've said, I was a little bit disparaging about this before we even started recording, but like, you have something like Starrcade, which, you know, if you watch the documentary that WWE produced and other people have commented on Starrcade, it's always kind of been like, that's their big annual showcase event. But unlike WWF with WrestleMania, WrestleMania is pretty much a straightforward card with a lot of various different matches. Like, Dusty was never afraid to make Starrcade something that was truly unique. And I mentioned Battle Bowl before we got started. And it's like, whether you like the idea or don't like the idea, or if you've copied that idea and used it down the road, the fact of the matter is, they weren't just going to stick with the status quo just because it just so happened to be their big annual event. Being able to just do something, just, you know, just doing something outside the box. And that's what you kind of got from Dusty, you know. And then you mentioned Great American Bash. I mean, Great American Bash, some would say that kind of superseded, that was above what Starrcade was. You know, like, that was sort of like their signature event. You kind of could have arguments about one way or the other. But what I was going back to talk about the legacy thing is, even if you didn't pay attention to WCW during that time period, even if you didn't watch the polka dots, you could, just looking at Twitter right now, just looking at like a young kid, a young guy who was just influenced by, you know, maybe it was even just a conversation like, you know, kid, you should really try to sell more. You should really try to, you know, do a little bit something, tighten up that move a little bit. Just some of the advice that he might have given to a younger performer just at the start of their career, not even a, like a veteran guy from his time working with WWE and developmental. Just maybe it could have even just been a quick little, like, here's a tip, kid, just do this instead of this, and then it kind of catapulted them onto something bigger. You really can't deny the legacy that he left.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned some of the outpouring of people in the industry. I've pulled a couple of them just as we were talking and recording. Bret the Hitman Hart. I deeply mourn the passing of my dear friend Dusty Rhodes. He was a true legend, one of the all-time greats of modern-day wrestling, who left his mark on every wrestler who had the privilege to know and work with him. Jim Cornette, words can't describe how much Dusty Rhodes taught me, how much he meant to my career. He was a genius, and he was wrestling. Rob Naylor, who worked as Dusty's assistant for a number of years in FCW in the changeover to NXT, he was an incredibly caring person, and he really took a lot of time and energy and cared about the talent that came through. Seth Rollins, I was ever so fortunate to be a friend to this man, to learn from him as a performer and as a human being. So once again, it spreads the gamut from, you know, Gerald Briscoe to Seth Rollins, of wrestlers from so many generations and so many eras that Dusty worked with, that Dusty had his fingerprints on their careers. You know, and I think, to me, I will always remember, like, what some might call the glory days of Jim Crockett Promotions, at the very least, the peak in the 80s. The very first thing that I ever remember seeing in wrestling was, you know, WCW, Worldwide Wrestling, NWA, whatever you want to call it, Worldwide Wrestling, the spring of 1986, heading into the Great American Bash. Gorgeous Jimmy Garvin had a plastic jar for tips for Wahoo McDaniel's retirement fund, and the big story that was breaking was that Ric Flair, the world champion, was going to defend the title 14 times in 30 days as part of the Great American Bash tour. And I mean, I barely remember a thing from 4 years of college, but I can tell you that the Great American Bash Tour, Flair was going to defend the title 14 times in 30 days, and I think it was going to start with Road Warrior Hawk in Philadelphia. And like that, I watched that television, you know, religiously, and that's what got me hooked as a fan. And it was, you know, the Rock and Roll Express, and you can meet the Rock and Roll Express at Carowinds, and the Rock and Roll Express lookalike contest, and it was the Midnight Express jamming the tennis racket into Baby Doll's abdomen, and we don't know if she's going to be able to have children. It was so many things that gripped you as a viewer. Whether it was, you know, the Four Horsemen jumping somebody in the locker room or in the parking lot, or, you know, the Midnights and the Rock and Rolls, or, you know, young guys like Magnum T.A. and Barry Windham and Nikita Koloff coming up. There were just so many elements. It's funny, Graham, that you've been watching those shows lately. I think you can attest to it. There's so many elements. It's unbelievable that you can get all that, all those names, all those, you know, people that are in the Hall of Fame or will go in the Hall of Fame in a 1 hour broadcast. It was a magical time.
It really was. And watching that, especially now, it's really interesting to see how everyone relates to Dusty on some level. Whether it's guys like Barry Windham or Sam Houston having some kind of protege relationship with Dusty, or whether it be the Road Warriors and Magnum and Nikita being partners, or whether it be the Horsemen as being opponents. But if you look back at the mid-80s, late-80s Crockett, and you take Dusty Rhodes out of the equation, who is the Horsemen, or who are the Horsemen without Dusty Rhodes?
Right.
Who is Magnum T.A.? And today is actually, I saw his birthday. Who is Magnum T.A. without Dusty Rhodes? Who is Nikita Koloff without Dusty Rhodes? What is Starrcade? What is the Great American Bash? What is War Games? Everything. What is Ric Flair's legacy without him being able to work with Dusty for years on end? Now, they probably worked a little bit too long, but, you know, everything that came from that, whether it be War Games or whatever, Barry Windham's heel turn, and it just everything, for good or bad, goes back to Dusty. And so all these guys, whether it be Big Bubba, or as you guys mentioned earlier, Jim Cornette, where do their careers go if Dusty Rhodes does not help come up with the idea for Starrcade with Jim Crockett Promotions back in 1983? And who are they if Dusty Rhodes does not come on as the booker in 1984? You know, what is the landscape of this industry without him doing everything that he did in every, from a performer standpoint to a booking standpoint? And even today with the NXT, a lot of people have been giving major praise to NXT, saying it's, you know, even better than what you'd see on Raw and SmackDown. Well, Dusty Rhodes is a major factor there.
Yeah. And even, you know, I think that's something that, you know, I remember when Paul Bearer died. I can't remember precisely who it is. It may have been Jim Cornette, because I do listen to a lot of Corny's things. But somebody on some show answered the question, how would Percy feel about CM Punk and The Undertaker using his death as part of their angle? And I believe it was Cornette who said, I assure you, Percy would absolutely love it. Nothing would tickle him more than, you know, that he was part of a major match at WrestleMania, even after his death. And I think in a way now, the void that will be left in NXT and in the developmental program, I gotta believe from everything I've heard about Dusty that, you know, to some extent he's gonna be kind of smiling at the thought of, who in the world do we get to replace Dusty Rhodes? Who in the world can impart as much, you know, wisdom and as much knowledge and as much just little tricks to connect to an audience? And I think maybe that's his legacy, that he continued to influence generations of talent. And I think part of his, I really think he would enjoy the thought of, you know, I can't think of anyone who can, you know, replace the impact that he was having on the developmental system right up until the time of his death. We always talk, you know, the big stars have the big egos. I think he would appreciate knowing that in a small way.
I love that visual of him kind of going, yeah, follow that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's absolutely, you know, something that fits Dusty's character of, you know, so many that have known him over the years. And you were talking about the return, the tribute to Starrcade, and for anyone that's not familiar, what that was a regional organization that had started running basically nostalgia shows in the Carolinas, using Dusty, using the Rock and Roll, the Midnight, you know, wrestlers of that era. And it all built up to the tribute to Starrcade, which was the big show where they had everybody. But there were a lot of shows kind of around that leading up to it. And we talked about this a little bit off air. I was on one of them, and it was really almost the only time that I was really around Dusty. I was managing Dennis Condrey and Bobby Eaton as the Midnight Express, you know, filling in for Jim Cornette, which you can't do. And they were working with Ricky Morton and Brad Armstrong, second from the top. And on top, was Dusty Rhodes against Terry Funk. And once again, you know, 1,000 people or whatever in this little gym in Gaffney, South Carolina, that came to see Dusty Rhodes against Terry Funk. And, you know, that was the most I was ever really around him. But you could tell, for whatever any fan might say about, you know, Dusty or his booking or the negative impact he may have had on the territory, I could tell in that moment the reverence that guys like Dennis Condrey and Bobby Fulton and even Terry Funk himself, I could tell the reverence that they had for Dusty. And he really did, it's a cliche, but he really did kind of everybody in the room gravitated to him when he walked in the room. And it was cool just to be able to share a locker room with him and hear, you know, him crack jokes about, make sure my payday is a dollar more than Terry Funk's, and just seeing him, you know, talk to Bobby Fulton and talk to Dennis Condrey. And he had a very powerful charisma about him. And I was listening to Rob Naylor, who was his assistant in FCW. I was listening to an interview that Rob Naylor did this afternoon before we started recording, and he said Dusty didn't let a lot of people in, but when he did let you in, you got to see the real him, and you got to see how much he cared and that he was, you know, his passion for this. And I think that is, I mean, what more can you ask for than that, than to, at, you know, 69 years old, to still have, you know, just as much drive and just as much ambition and just as much passion for any line of work, no matter what it is, as you did, you know, 10, 20, 30 years ago. Ultimately, how much more can you ask than that, guys?
Not much. And as we said earlier, the list of guys that are of that caliber that have been able to contribute for decade after decade after decade is dwindling. And I think we're down to Vince and Cornette and Heyman and Bill Watts, and from a mentor promoter standpoint,
yeah,
that list is dwindling quickly. And so hopefully, especially when it comes to NXT, they can get someone in that role that can maybe not be Dusty, because you can't be Dusty, but can bring some comparable level of experience to that position.
And to piggyback off of that again, we were talking about Magnum TA a little while ago. He actually on Twitter wrote, and it's kind of like what we were just talking about. He goes, quote, "I've lost a friend who can never be replaced. I am thankful for the time we shared." And I don't know how you could replace a guy like, I mean, I know what he's saying, you know, I mean, he's going to, you know, but having somebody that could do what he did and the mind that he had will be a tough act to follow, will be a hard thing to replace. And like you guys were saying, it, you know, he is like one of the last of this particular era of making an impact on this, what we call this kind of culture that we find ourselves in. He's like one of the last of the Mohicans, if you will, when it comes to this sort of thing.
Yeah, I definitely, I think it's a great testament to him that his influence will be carried on for generations, and hopefully, like Graham alluded to and like Dan alluded to, if there's no replacing Dusty Rhodes for the job that he was doing, but hopefully whoever does kind of take the reins will be someone that will do him proud and will continue the work that he started. Absolutely want to send our thoughts and prayers and condolences to everyone in the Runnels family, everyone who knew him well and is greatly affected by his death. Like I said earlier, just people from all walks of life in and out of the industry have been turning out on Twitter, sending their condolences, talking about how Dusty's life and death has touched them. And in our small part, we wanted to scrap the show that we had planned today, put forth this little tribute. Guys, any parting words before we sign off on memories, the legacy, recommendations of stuff to check out if someone out there has never seen it? You know, we kind of neglected. There is a generation out there that may only know him as, you know, the father of Cody and Dustin from an angle with the Shield, or as the general manager of NXT for a while, or whatever. Parting thoughts before we wrap things up here on this show in remembrance of the American Dream.
Well, one for me, and I didn't even realize it, what Dan was saying earlier, I've been looking, you know, when you're just kind of looking at something, but you're not looking at it. I've been looking at my framed Survivor Series 1989 poster for about an hour, and I got that signed by Dusty at that Tribute to Starrcade show. He signed it next to his dream team there. And I remember waiting through the line, and it's my turn, and he calls me and says, "Hello there, young man." And the friend that I was with, who's probably about 10 years older than me, that became a running joke for the longest time, that I was like 25 or something, and Dusty Rhodes is calling me a young man. I just thought it was funny. But for you guys, what would be, to kind of piggyback off what Brad just pitched out there, what would be a match or a promo that really stands out for you when it comes to Dusty?
Obviously, you know, you can't go wrong with the Hard Times promo. That's the kind of everybody's go-to. But I'll go against the grain for my go-to is look up, and I'm sure it's on eBay. Look up, it may even be from one of the Clash of Champions, Dusty Rhodes asking Dustin Rhodes to let Dusty be his partner and go into War Games against Colonel Rob Parker and the Stud Stable. I think it is from one of the Clash of Champions, maybe like August of 94, maybe. Don't quote me on that.
It was a build to that one, because it was Dusty and Dustin against Arn and Terry Funk, maybe.
I think the promo's intact on the show, though, or at least the tail end of it.
Yeah.
But just drama and... like I said earlier, he made the audience feel, and that's something that I think can never be, should never be lost in our business, is for all the, you know, for all the beautiful aesthetic moves and for all the, you know, neat creative finishes and neat creative characters. Wrestling is not necessarily meant to be just purely a spectator sport. Wrestling is meant to be interactive with the audience, and Dusty made the audience feel. So I would say, if for one thing to look up is look up that promo. It's like August-ish of 94, and he impassionately asks Dustin Rhodes to be his partner, and to not pick anybody else, to pick the American Dream as his partner, and to carry this broken down old man so that he can team with his son. I thought the angle they did, what, about a year and a half ago or so with the Shield, I thought was beautiful and a retelling, a modernization of that. But I would recommend both of those as great emotionally charged Dusty moments.
Well, Basil agrees with you. That's what you just heard. But I wish they could just bottle up that feud. And I'm going back to like my childhood. But I wish they could just bottle up that feud between Dusty and Macho King Randy Savage, Sapphire, and Sherry, and just kind of put it all together in a nice little tightly tightly wrapped package, because I just enjoyed sort of the back and forth between two guys that were just sort of masters on the mic. And, you know, you did have kind of the distraction with the women, but you were able to get away with doing like a brother love segment with like Sapphire and and Sherry on in the middle of the Royal Rumble, and it still be, you know, worth watching and worth seeing what happens next. And just to see, and it's kind of unorthodox because a lot of people look at this as a downer for each of their careers, particularly Savage's, of having to do that mixed tag at WrestleMania 6. But just the commentary that just carried that match, you know, with Jesse being Jesse and just ripping Sapphire and Rhodes. But, you know, they still look like they're having the time of their lives out there in front of the Sky Dome crowd. You have Miss Elizabeth factored in, just like really just like money stuff at a time where wrestling was like the most important thing in my life during that time period. And just some of the lines that you had after that, like after that particular feud ends and you go into what we've talked about before, the Million Dollar Man program when Sapphire gets bought, with getting Dustin involved into the fold, the very young Dustin Rhodes getting involved during that following Royal Rumble. And you had like memorable lines like, you know, blood is thicker than water, but my money is thicker than blood. Like, what does that even mean? But you remember it now to this day because it was just so memorable. It just like I was getting back to before, you always were invested in a Dusty Rhodes program, regardless of how outrageous and how silly it might appear. You still were involved and you still wanted to know how it all would turn out in the end for the American Dream. And again, it's going to be really, this is going to be a tough one. I really do feel that, you know, certain guys, we've seen it before. We've seen it even recently with other deaths. This one's really going to hit close to home for a lot of people. And this show is an absolute example as to why that would be.
Yeah, yeah, for
I
me,
think, I hit the nail on the head right there. It's going to be, it's emotional investment. Go ahead, Graham.
For me, if I'm thinking a match, it's probably a match that we talked about, oddly enough, last week when we were talking about Dusty finishes. It's the Dusty Rhodes Ric Flair Starrcade '85 showdown where Dusty gets the 1-2-3. And for that night, he's the champion. And you go backstage and they interview him and all the baby faces are behind him and he has the belt and he is the champion. And I think that whole match, the whole booking of it, the whole overturning the decision to a T is Dusty Rhodes. It's Dusty Rhodes the performer and it's Dusty Rhodes the booker. And that and the crowd takes to it, and it just works for that night. It just works. For a promo, I'm going to go with what I said earlier. It's the SummerSlam 90, right after he misses the limo, which brilliantly enough they redo years later with Goldust and Marlena and Brian Pillman. That's how good that segment was. Is they did it again with them years later. But it's right after he misses the limo and he's talking with Mean Gene and all about how you can't buy everything, Ted DiBiase, and you can't buy the American Dream, and you can't buy the American way of life. And it's really the end of the polka dot. You don't see the polka dots after that. So it was really a changing character of Dusty Rhodes in the WWF.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, just not to cut you off, but I just realized I was watching Raw the other day, and this is obviously before all this happened. And I realized that serious John Cena, like John Cena who's ready to fight as he kind of escalates throughout the promo, that's Dusty Rhodes.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a great point, actually. That's a great point. I definitely think that all of us should, and I encourage all of you to, fire up the WWE Network, get on YouTube.com, look up, study some American Dream Dusty Rhodes tonight, and God knows if you're in this business, that's the guy to look to point to show how to cut a promo, how to do an interview, how to talk people into a building, how to reach them emotionally. We thank you guys for listening. We hope that you will come back again on the History of Wrestling or Wrestling with Optimism. We will be back very, very soon on the Place to Be Nation with a lot more shows and a lot more talking points in the very, very near future. For Dan McGinn, for Graham Cawthon, thank you very much, and we will talk at you real, real soon.
Here is the American Dream. Dusty Rhodes. And Dusty, your fans welcome you back, man.
First of all, I would like to thank the many, many fans throughout this country that wrote cards and letters to Dusty Rhodes, the American dream, while I was down. Secondly, I want to thank Jim Crockett Promotions for waiting and taking the time, because I know how important it was. Starrcade 85, it is to the resident fans, it is to Jim Crockett Promotions. And Dusty Rhodes, the American dream, with that wait, got what I wanted. Ric Flair, the world's heavyweight champion. I don't have to say a lot more about the way I feel about Ric Flair. No respect, no honor. There is no honor among thieves in the first place. He put hard times on Dusty Rhodes and his family. You don't know what hard times are, Daddy. Hard times are when the textile workers around this country are out of work and got four or five kids and can't pay their wages, can't buy their food. Hard times are when the auto workers are out of work and they tell them go home. And hard times are when a man has worked at a job 30 years. 30 years. They give him a watch, kick him in the butt, and say, hey, a computer took your place, Daddy. That's hard time. That's hard time. And Ric Flair, you put hard times on this country by taking Dusty Rhodes out. That's hard time. And we all had hard times together. I admit I don't look like the athlete of the day supposed to look. My belly's just a little big. My hand is just a little big. But brother, I am bad and they know I'm bad. And there were two bad people. One was John Wayne, and he's dead, brother. And the other one's right here. Nature Boy Ric Flair. The world's heavyweight title belongs to these people. I'm going to reach out right now. I want you at home to know my hand is touching your hand for this gathering of the biggest body of people in this country, in this universe, all over the world. Now, reach it out. Because the love that was given me, and this time I will repay you now, because I will be the next world's heavyweight champion on this hard time blues. Dusty Rhodes Tour 85. And Ric Flair, Nature Boy, let me leave you with this. One way to hurt Ric Flair is to take what he cherishes more than anything in the world. That's the world's heavyweight title. I'm gonna take it. I've been there twice. This time when I take it, Daddy, I'm gonna take it for you. Let's gather for it. Don't let me down now, because I came back for you, for that man up there that died 10, 12 years ago and never got the opportunity to see a real wolf champion. And I'm proud of you. Thank God I have you. And I love you. Love you!